guys. I want to welcome you to Outside the Beltway of Healthcare. This is Barry Alexander. I'm with Polsinelli. And Harry, would you like to introduce?
Harry Spiritus with Polsinelli. And happy to say this is our fourth episode.
Fourth. Oh, my gosh.
How about that? We're on a roll, man.
Wow. That's exciting. That's really exciting.
Very.
I can't believe those of you who have stuck with us this far. You know, last time, Harry, we asked people to send us a few questions. And I am pleased to say we got one question. One question. And I'd like to quickly read it to you. Dear Harry and Barry, we love your show. I added that, okay, just for full disclosure. The federal government is made up of three branches, the legislative, executive, and judicial. If that's the case, why does Congress both write and interpret their own rules?
Well, Congress writes the laws, votes on them, sends them to the executive to execute them. The judiciary then interprets the law. And then you've got another layer of the unelected that interpret the law too, which is the regulators and the regulating community. That would be your CMS, Centers for Medicare, Medicaid Services, Food and Drug Administration, Environmental
Larry,
Protection.
Harry, come on. The real answer today, the crowd wants to know. Look, man, we all know that everybody writes and interprets the rules in Washington, D.C. So in that regard, if you don't mind, because I know you want to get to what's going on the Hill. I really do. I know you do.
Okay.
And then maybe also you can explain to everybody who can't see what you're wearing, the ball cap. We'll come back to that. I wanted to introduce a guest who has somehow agreed to join us today. I'm not really sure how. His name is Josh Arters. He's one of our colleagues in the Nashville office, and he's with our payer dispute group. And I mean, we have we talk about Washington, D.C. politics, but there has been a major political change that ended up in a statute related to balanced billing of patients in out-of-network situations, resulting in the No Surprises Act. Last week, it came out, Josh, I believe, in the preliminary form, and then exciting today, we have my favorite version, the three-column version in four-point font, so I can actually read it. Anyways, I wanted to introduce Josh and see if, Josh, you can tell us a little bit about the proposed rule, final rule, interim final rule.
Indeed, interim final rule, yes. Thanks for having me. Happy to be on the show. Exciting times, a lot of things happening with this new rule coming out. So we've taken a long look at it, and I think we have a general idea of how it works, but we'll see if we can answer any questions you might have.
Well, what's the bottom line? Tell me, we had the first part of the No Surprises Act interim final rule come out in July, and then we just had the second phase. Tell me what the first phase did, and then the second phase that we've just seen, if you can.
Right. So for those listeners who don't know the ins and outs of the No Surprises Act, it was a groundbreaking consumer protection law that was passed in December of last year that deals with surprise bills, situations where a patient unintentionally goes and receives out-of-network care, whether it's out-of-network emergency care or in situations where a patient might schedule a hip surgery at an in-network hospital and they didn't know that the anesthesiologist happened to be out-of-network. And they end up with a big bill from this out-of-network physician. So this law that Congress passed last December was passed to address this issue. And what it does is it prohibits that practice. It prohibits balance billing, meaning the patient cannot be billed for the difference between what the insurance company pays and what the hospital or the provider's billed charges. And it makes the provider or the hospital just work directly with the insurance company to deal with the reimbursement rate. And that was the general idea of the No Surprises Act as passed. But the act, as you mentioned before, it leaves a lot to the regulators. And two key areas where it was left to regulation dealt with something that the act calls the qualifying payment amount, and that's the payer's median contracted rate. And that's important under the No Surprises Act because it's something that's considered when a final out-of-network rate is determined. And it's also what is used to set patient cost sharing. Another big area that the Act left open for regulation was how this dispute resolution process will work. The Act calls it the IDR process. We know it's like an arbitration, but it's submitted without a hearing on the papers, and an entity known as an IDR entity makes a decision. But the ins and outs of how that IDR process works was not really clarified under the Act. So that was also left to the regulators. So last July, the regulators issued a first part of rules, an interim final rule, that outlined the way that qualifying payment amount is calculated. And again, it's calculated by the payer, but just the methodology that the payer will use. And then the second part that just came out and was just published today in the Federal Register outlines the way that the IDR process will function.
I'm just going to pause for a second. The IDR process, right? That's the process where I'm a provider, I'm an emergency room doc, emergency department staffing company. I am very unhappy with the amount that you are paying me on an out-of-network basis, and I want to take that dispute somewhere, right?
That's correct, right. Right, that's what that IDR process is. And it's modeled on some state, there are already some state laws that address this issue, and it's modeled primarily off of the New York and the New Jersey state laws that have similar systems where it's a dispute resolution mechanism that's through the state where the provider and the payers go to resolve their disputes over what the appropriate level of reimbursement is.
Well, I mean, it has to be perfect, right? New York and New Jersey. So that's fantastic. Let me ask you this. No offense. We've got family in New York and New Jersey. I get some of my best smoked fish out of Russ and Daughters in New York. No plug. Did I already put a plug in for them once before, Harry? I think I may have.
I think you may have.
Okay. They are not a sponsor of the show yet, but if they'd like to send some sable to my house, I'd really appreciate it. Sorry, Josh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. This is very serious. The IDR process the providers have been waiting for a while. Have the arbitration rules been set in the new interim final rule in terms of how that will work?
Yes, they have. And it's been, everyone has been waiting for these rules to come out for the last year. And we now finally have a better idea of what the regulators envision for how this IDR process will work. I think the biggest takeaway that we have from these interim final rules that just came out, and it is a big one, and that is the weight upon which the IDR entity or the weight that the IDR entity will put upon the qualifying payment amount. How important is that median contracted rate in a determination on what the appropriate out-of-network rate should be? And the way that the No Surprises Act is drafted is Congress didn't state whether or not one factor that the IDR entity should consider should receive more weight. I listed a number of factors, including the median contracted rate, but also the provider's training and experience, the patient acuity, complexity of care, things like that. But there was no specific weight or guidance on how those factors should be considered. And what this interim final rule says is that median contracted rate should be given a presumption that is correct. There's a starting presumption that is the correct reimbursement amount for the out-of-network services.
So you know, kind of bottom line then, Josh, with that presumption, does that mean that the burden of proof, if that's the right term, if you will, for this regulation is really going to shift to the provider community to defend that the rate, for example, is not an appropriate median rate that they've calculated at the plan level?
That's exactly right. The provider, when entering a dispute at the IDR process, will have the burden to produce what the interim final rule calls credible evidence. It's not a heightened, clear, and convincing standard, but it's credible evidence that the IDR entity should deviate from the median contracted rate.
Yeah.
So the rule goes even further, and it says that in fact, if a provider does not submit what the IDR entity deems as credible, the IDR entity can completely ignore it, and should ignore it, and must ignore it if the IDR entity deems it not credible.
So that's pretty high. That's a pretty high standard. And I know you're going to be working on an alert for the firm, and everybody should look out for that coming. Josh, just one real quick question before I let you get back to your day job. The arbitrators that are going to handle these disputes, do we know where they come from at this point in time? I mean, have they defined them? Are they with the Social Security Administration? Are they with HHS? Or are they folks to be found in the future?
They are folks to be found in the future. They are not within any of the departments. The IFR sets forth some criteria. They must have some experience, relevant experience with healthcare reimbursement. They must also demonstrate that they've gone through some level of training through the AAA or the AHLA or some similar dispute resolution organization. But beyond that, we don't know who they will be yet. There's currently an application portal on the CMS website, and they are accepting applications to become IDR entities. So it's yet to be seen who these folks will be who will be making these decisions.
I want to put a plug in for Polsinelli too, because I believe we're going to have a lot of associates that are actually going to be applying secretly for arbitration positions. Josh, I know you're working on that carefully. So, hey, buddy, I really thank you for
happy to be here
for joining us.
And sorry, I had to cut out so quickly. I could talk about this No Surprises Act all day long.
I know you could.
Let me.
I know. It's great. Really appreciate it. So thank you, and you have a great day.
Thanks.
Harry,
thank you so much. Really, that was great, and you are our number one guest.
He is.
Well, what an honor.
He's definitely our first guest.
Right.
Our first guest. And
so that makes me, in order, if I'm the only guest, then I must be the
you are
the
number one
guest.
That's right.
Two,
so.
But Josh, don't flatter yourself. There will be others. But thank you again. Harry.
I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Josh. Harry.
Yes,
we did a lot of singing last time for which we've received mostly unfavorable feedback, but
let's not sing.
I have been thinking about some other songs that might capture you, but mostly today I'd like everybody to just visualize. Could you explain what the ball cap is on your head and what
it's my Green Lantern hat? It's Green Lantern.
You're wearing.
I'm not really a Green Lantern fan because, you know, being a little bit ADHD, there's too many Green Lanterns. You know, there's all sorts of Green Lanterns in alternate universes and stuff. So, but I like the Green Lantern emblem. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
My son has one too. He's got the same hat. So
see what I don't know. My kids are in college, and I obviously haven't seen the movie. I'm feeling a little embarrassed and awkward right now.
Don't be embarrassed.
Right, I do.
Don't be embarrassed about that, at least.
No.
You can be embarrassed about other things.
I'm going to be more prepared next time.
Yeah. Really, yeah. All right.
Dude, what is going on the Hill? I mean, we talked about this last week.
We're still not at any kind of resolution on the reconciliation bill. There is a debt limit agreement that McConnell and Schumer have been forging. Apparently, it's going to start at 7:30 this evening. They're going to start debate, and move that process along. However, Senator Cornyn, the majority whip, the minority whip on the Senate side, Republican, basically said this is going to be like the birthing process to get Republicans to vote for this debt limit bill.
One of the confusing things here. So normally the debt limit ceiling would have been dealt with in the budget reconciliation bill, but because the budget reconciliation bill is stuck because we're stuck over the infrastructure bill, basically, right, we have to do some kind of short-term debt extension.
That's right. This is an interim debt extension bill to December, which then would give the majority, about a month and a half to get this reconciliation bill and infrastructure bill back in order to see if we can get something moving. It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I marvel at the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, only because he really is a student of process. And absolutely, he understands the political process pretty darn well, probably better than anybody in the Senate chamber. So I just wonder what is he seeing that other people are not seeing in terms of making this deal? Because there are Republicans in the caucus in the Senate that are not necessarily happy with Senator McConnell moving in this direction on this deal.
And what do you mean by that? They're more willing to find a compromise?
No, they look at the Democrats. The majority has the votes to pass this debt ceiling bill. They have the votes to pass a reconciliation bill. At least in theory, they do.
That's true.
So I think it's, in their view, let them do it. Let them show that they have the votes, that they can get things done within their own caucus. But obviously they can't.
Yeah, the debt ceiling bill is just like budget reconciliation. We've been talking about that with folks here. You only need 51 votes. It's not like the infrastructure bill. Harry, last week we were talking a lot about Senator Manchin. And some of the roadblock is too strong a word. What are we hearing in terms of what Senator Manchin may want to try and get a deal done?
Well, he's sticking to his guns on the $1.5 trillion. There is now talk of means testing with regard to Medicare expansion. So that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out on means testing. What will the threshold be on means testing? Means testing meaning that if you're a senior in Medicare making over a certain amount of money, you won't qualify for hearing, vision, and dental. But if you're under that threshold, you will qualify. Then if you're under that threshold, you might well be in the threshold of being on Medicaid. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out. It's again, interesting.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, we were talking about this last time, just in terms of the last time we saw this. And like, I feel like every time we get together, and I'm sure everybody who's listening to this is like, okay, Harry, Barry, don't you have the answer? And it's like, it's up and down.
Nobody
was
going
to put it for a vote. Now it's pulled off the table. And we've got a ton of Medicare pieces that are hanging out there. And even what's the telehealth snippet that you were?
Well, the telehealth snippet is interesting because, there's really nothing in the reconciliation bill on telehealth. We're heading towards a cliff here on physician payment. If memory serves me correct, we're looking at, a crunch when it comes to physician payment, which is basically SGR redo, right? You know, the sustainable growth rate redo. So this is not in this reconciliation package. So this is all going to be left as a separate bucket to do. And this is something that I think the GOP on the House Energy and Commerce Committee is thoroughly focused on. However, the majority on the Energy and Commerce Committee is not focused on it. They're not focusing on the cliff that we're approaching in terms of, you know, payment for docs and telehealth.
Yeah, because telehealth was really an expanded benefit during COVID, and that'll be interesting to see it play out. You know, I promised everybody two things this week, particularly the marketing group. Number one, we would try and end on time. I did promise.
Let me add a couple things here before you go into this. You know, you mentioned Joe Manchin, but I also want to mention Kyrsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona. I think we saw some things happen to her this past week that, quite frankly, are completely out of bounds. Basically people following her into a public restroom while she's in the stall, and kind of, you know, pushing on her to be more supportive on the reconciliation bill and the $3.5 trillion. Apparently, she was on an airplane heading back from Arizona. One of our colleagues was on that airplane and witnessed this firsthand, where, you know, the senator was accosted by some folks with selfie sticks. This is not the right way to do these kind of things. Let me just say, I don't believe that, you know, accosting a senator on their vote is the right way to do these things in a public forum like that.
I mean, I agree completely, and I don't think it matters what side of the aisle.
Absolutely, it's not the right way to do it. And I can tell you that from what I know of the senator from Arizona, this just deepens her resolve. I don't see this kind of thing swaying her. I see this kind of causing her to dig in even more.
Mm. You know, after that serious note, and I do think that's a serious common concern. It does feel sometimes like the spirit of collaboration over the last few months is maybe dead and gone. I was going to end on a brighter note with your new theme song, Harry. It's hard to be perfect when you're humble in every way.
Well, it's true, Barry. I mean, I've only been wrong once. It was this time that I thought I was wrong, and I actually ended up being right. So, you know, it is true.
Well, I think time has come to an end. Thank you guys for joining us today. Oh, we said this last time, and since we only got one question, and I also have a little confession. I wrote the questions, so I sent the question to myself. So we only got one question that I wrote this time. We would really love to get some questions, comments, feedback, anything you toss our way, guys. Otherwise, we will, I don't know, maybe see you in a couple of days.
Well, this is great. Thanks, everyone.
Have a great day.
We want to remind listeners that the choice of a lawyer and lobbyist is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertising. The information and discussions in this podcast do not constitute legal advice, and listeners should consult legal counsel regarding their specific subject matter. Thank you for listening to Inside Law, a podcast produced by Polsinelli.